From a $50 sale to $50,000 in sales, welcome to the emotional roller coaster ride that was my first $50K on Etsy. Welcome to Hat Chats. I'm your host, Michelle Baker, and today I'm here with special guest, me. I'm going to be sharing the ins and outs, the ups and downs of the emotional roller coaster ride that has been my Etsy life as a seller on Etsy for the last 5 years. And I say that in present tense. I am still on Etsy. I am still selling with the shop that you will hear me talk about in this episode. I have a lot to share, and I'm hoping that some of my trials and tribulations will maybe save you a little bit of headache or tears, maybe, or heartache. And you get to play judge and jury in listening to some of the decisions and things that I've done along the way as to whether or not they were good or not. You know, I think I've made some good decisions, and I know I've made some that could have been a lot better. And what this whole segment is, this is one segment of a multi-part series that focuses on our emotional reaction. I think it's a really important mindset aspect to talk about because we as creatives and independent artisans, whatever it is that we do, we're crafters or creators or designers. I think in general, if you'll allow me to stereotype our peeps, so to speak, we're kind of intuitive. We like to go with what we feel in our gut or in our heart. And because of that, I think we make a lot of emotional decisions. Now, I think anyone making a decision in life in general, emotions do play in. But I think that it's fair to say that creatives will really fly with, you know, their heart on their sleeve and not necessarily weigh all of the metrics that you could weigh before you actually react to something. Anyway, that's been my experience. And so I want to walk through a few things. And in today's episode in particular, I'm focusing on the part of my journey where I went from my first $50 sale to $50,000 in sales, which didn't take all that long. It took a little bit of time, a couple of years. But it was, you know, that type of growth was an amazing and very encouraging type of a journey, of course. And I want to share a few of the things that were eye-opening for me, a few of the things that made me realize I was going in the right direction, and then a few of the pitfalls that I did hit. So let's start at the very beginning. And at the very beginning, I'm going to tell you that I'm going to give you a couple of statistics about the state of my shop currently. And I want you to take this in stride. So I just recently found out by using the application E-Rank, which is helps you set up your search engine optimization, helps you understand what is trending in searches on Etsy or also now on Google and on Amazon. So you can really kind of get a lot of insight as to what's trending, what's popular, what people are looking for. And in E-Rank, it indexes all of the shops on Etsy and it can tell you who's doing the best. So there are shops that are absolutely killing it on a day-to-day basis. And I try not to look at those too often because there's another whole podcast on comparisonitis. So the shops that are doing 400 sales a day, 500 more, I don't want to look at that right now because I am not doing that, but good for them. What I did find out is my shop is ranked as in the top 3% globally. Now, if there are over 2 million active Etsy shops, being in the top 3% is really not too shabby, right? I mean, that's solid. And I look at that as a very positive indicator. But if you break it down and you say, okay, everyone line up to get your awards, you're all getting, you know, your award of your ranking globally, I would be waiting in line until they called something like number 51,300. I don't know, 51,000 something. That's how far back in the line I would be. But to me, it tells me that behind me, after they call number 51,000, there are a lot of people who I'm thinking aren't selling what they could be selling because many of them are simply giving up on Etsy. And the reason I've come to that conclusion is I've been doing some searches lately that turn up a lot of empty storefronts where somebody opened the store, there is a name there, but they've taken down all of the merchandise. They've basically either given up on the shop or completely taken their business elsewhere and off of the Etsy platform. I also had done that. The shop that I currently run is not my first shop. My first shop failed absolutely miserably. I put hours and hours of time into setting it up, but had no idea what I was doing. So I gave up. And that was the end of it. It's one of those shops that has, I'm sure it wouldn't even be considered an active shop anymore. It's not findable. It is gone. So when we look at our standings and our stats, what I'm here to share is that there are a lot of ways that Etsy will help you, and there are a lot of liabilities or ways that, you know, maybe you should not be relying on Etsy 100%. So talking about the advantages and disadvantages here will be what we kind of focus on. Let's start with the really quick story of my very, very first sale that I made on my current Etsy shop. It was late November, and I had just posted a few items. I had very few listings at the time, and I had created this little cute wooden sign. It was hand-painted, and you're probably rolling your eyes already because the market right now is completely saturated with wooden signs. But a few years ago, it wasn't so saturated. And so it was this tiny, lightweight sign that would sit on a bar countertop, and it simply said, "Signature drink, Purple Rain." And then it described the ingredients, and it was lettered very nicely. It did not even have an illustration. If you do any research on what my current shop is, it's heavy into illustration now, and I've really kind of carved a niche in the whole signature drink world, so to speak. But at the time, this is going way back in time, and I didn't know really what I was going to be doing. I just wanted to try, you know, just throw some things up there and try. That's how you get started, right? So somebody saw that and they loved it, but of course, you know, they wanted it to say something different. And what I found was also typical is they needed it right away. So I ended up with a rush order for somebody's wedding, and they needed a couple of these signs with a couple different drinks. And it also had to be like rush shipped. So you pay a lot when you're doing, I think it was overnight shipping. It was that much of a rush job. So I was absolutely shocked to, at the end of the whole interaction, make really close to $80. I only made maybe close to $50 on the sale, but then it was another $30 or so just in shipping. So it was like an $80 sale for this item that I looked at like, yeah, it's cute, but I wouldn't spend that much on this item. And it was the biggest awakening for me. That was really the spark of my journey that got me to start to realize that I am not my own customer. That's something I think is very important for you to realize. As a creative, sometimes we have a difficult time with the pricing of things. And then we also have to factor in what the market will bear. Is the market saturated? Things like that. But at this particular point in time, my offering was actually unique. I can tell you right now, I'm laughing. I'm like laughing through tears because really my market has become so saturated. It's just ridiculous. But at the time, this was something very unique, and I was offering that, and I was also offering a custom service. So there's also something to be said here about the fact that this particular customer was ready and willing to pay what they were for this product, and not everybody would be. But I had the fortune of meeting this person, and they came into my life, and they wanted what I was offering, and away we went. You know, that was my first sale, and that encouraged me. So even though everything that I began to sell over the following 3 months, 6 months, year after that, my product lines kept evolving and evolving and changing based on experience, based on customer feedback, and based on what was actually going to be sustainable for me. You do reach a point where you don't want every single order to be a fire drill, you know, and just a rush job and heavy pressure, time pressure. So pricing is affected by all of those things. But that was my first $50 sale. That was my first indicator that, you know what, I can make these cute little things and somebody somewhere is going to want them. There are a lot of people in this world, okay? A lot. And just because something seems or feels easy for you, you know, if you're someone who can sew and or even knit or something like that, I can tell you, I look at that and I say, oh my gosh, really? You can do that? That's awesome. You know, I can't. So everybody has their own skills. That's what Etsy is all about. Not everybody can etch into glass. Not everybody has that equipment. Not everybody is a sculptor or a ceramic artist. So you have to really own what you do and understand that, of course, there are going to be people who say, oh, that's much too much for that. I could find it at Target for $9.99. And you say, okay, good luck. Go ahead. You know, off to Target you go. Etsy is supposed to be about something a little bit more special. That's what its roots are in. So offering a product that somebody will pay for and realizing that there is a value is really what gave me my legs to say, you know what, I'm going to keep trying. And the more I put out there, the more that I let people see what I had to offer, I generated a following, I generated a lot of interest, and I generated a lot of sales. So I was super encouraged to go in. Let's say I'm thinking that first sale was late November. So it was a matter of 18 months or so before I had made maybe $20,000, $25,000 in sales. And my overhead was pretty low because I didn't stick with doing the hand-painted wooden signs. I eventually converted over to doing laser prints on cardstock and very high quality, packaged very nicely. And again, customized, personalized. So it really did take off. I was able to generate a lot of my traffic and interest by pinning new pins of my products onto Pinterest, which was also, at the time, Pinterest was a little bit new. And so that was kind of getting in on the early days of Pinterest. And just the traffic between Pinterest and maybe a few posts here and there that I might do on Facebook, I have to say, in the very early years for me, it was always Pinterest that brought over 85% of my traffic. Etsy really, I'm not going to say didn't bring me traffic. It absolutely brought me traffic. But here's why, and this is important, I think, for you to keep in mind no matter what kind of niche you're in. We as creatives are typically, we're selling things that are either gifts for other people, or just there's something that's not necessarily needed. You know, we're not selling the things you go pick up at the grocery store. It's not the milk and eggs and bread that you need. It's, you know, discretionary cash, and people sometimes don't even know what they're looking for. It's like, I didn't need a gift for Uncle Ted, or I need a gift for Mom, or, you know, and they don't even know what they want. So maybe I'll find something cute and handmade on Etsy. What can I search on? In my particular niche, I knew that not everyone's just wandering around saying, I don't know what I want to drink. What should I drink? I need a signature drink sign. The only people who would really be interested in that would be someone planning a function or an event. So I narrowed down into the weddings, and search engine terms that I would use, that I still use, are things that, sure, signature drink sign. Of course, that's a great one, but you still have another 12 tags that Etsy says you can use. So what are you going to use for a tag? Think of things that are a little bit outside of being so specific. Wedding gift, personalized wedding gift, wedding decoration, you know, things like that. And that goes on and on for each individual kind of segment that you're trying to target. If it's baby things, is it nursery decorations? Is it invitations? Is, you know, so many ways to go with finding your audience before they even know they're looking for you. This is all search engine optimization. Well, what I found to become the case was I needed to learn more and more about how to succeed on Etsy, and I joined lots of Facebook groups so that I could get insights from other people who were out, you know, out there longer than I had been and who had more experience. And that has been great. I continue to do that. But there's a lot of negativity out there. And so sometimes when another 10 people are having a really bad day, you need to shield yourself from that negativity and not necessarily be sucked into their emotional mindset. I've had times where my shop was really, really doing well, and you see a handful of people saying, there's something wrong with the algorithm. I'm not seeing any visits, or I'm not getting any sales. And, you know, this is always going to be the case. There are highs and lows and busy periods of traffic that are different for one another all the time, all year round. Whatever it is you're selling, you need to really be in it for the long run. And the reason for that is you need to understand the patterns that are going to affect you and that are going to affect your shop. Because if you just start getting, you know, if every day you log on to Facebook groups where the sky is falling, Etsy's terrible, they changed the algorithms, we're all going down, the ship is going down. You literally, if you go looking for this, you will find this every single day from somebody in some group. And yes, I will tell you, there is such a thing as the mysterious algorithm. And it does change. They do, with what seems like a flip of a switch, with a test that Etsy decides to run, you may or may not be affected. Your traffic may or may not be affected. But there are a lot of things that will affect how you are found on Etsy. So we'll talk about that more, not necessarily in this particular episode, because like I said, this topic is going to be broken up over a few episodes. But just keep in mind that people will get into a mindset that's very negative, and it doesn't mean that you have to take on that negativity or take what they're saying as truth. Because, again, we are kind of intuitive, we're a little emotional, and it is upsetting when you haven't had any sales. It is upsetting when you feel like it's crickets, so to speak, and nobody's finding you, no one's coming to your shop. What we need to do is, and this is the acronym that I have come up with, it is emotions that sink you, okay? Emotions that sink you, E-T-S-Y, and it is evidence that saves you, E-T-S-Y. So when we look at how our shop is doing, keep in mind that we're always going to be flooded with emotions, whether they are our own emotions or those of people that we're trying to look to for consolation or for advice. Emotions run really high with people who are selling something that's an extension of their creativity. It's just natural. Emotions are going to run high when you're selling something that's an extension of you, your art, your creative self. Because it is hard to detach from that. It is hard to not take things personally. But it's also our job to do that. So before we go much further, let's take a quick recap of the two big takeaways here. First of all, you are not your own customer. Okay, you probably wouldn't buy your own item. Why would you? You can make it yourself. Now, there are a lot of people out there who may go around saying that about your items, and that's fine. Let them go make it themselves. If they can and they want to, off they go. There are plenty of people in this world that cannot do what you can do. Focus on them, okay? You are never going to please everyone. You need to focus on the people who do love your stuff, who do want your stuff. But you are also not in that group because you are exactly that same person who's going to say, oh, I could make that. Of course you can. That's why you're making it. That's why you're selling it. Own that. Own the fact that you can do it and other people cannot and they need you. And of course, you know, look around. Don't design in a vacuum. You want to check what the market can bear. But, you know, have confidence that there is, if there's a market at all out there, if you've got competition, that's awesome. If you have competition, that means that there's a market for what you're selling. So go for it. The second takeaway here is emotions that sink you, evidence that saves you. And what we want to, first of all, note for evidence is that patterns emerge over time. If you are going to embark on something like an Etsy shop, you need to be in it for the long haul. Now, that doesn't mean forever, but I really strongly recommend that if you're going to do this, give it a full year at least. And honestly, if you can stick with it for two, that's even better because one full year only has four seasons, and those four seasons are really different. When I first got into the whole wedding industry niche, I assumed that my very busiest time was going to be June. Everyone talks about June weddings, right? And this was me coming into an industry that I didn't know anything about. Well, I found out that the people who are having June weddings are planning them in April and May. And so I was with my family on a vacation during the April school break, and my phone was blowing up with all kinds of inquiries about orders. I had no idea that in that particular year, April was the worst time in the world for me to have gone on vacation. It was like I was, you know, in the middle of Disney World on my phone constantly. But I also noticed a trend as time went on that lately, October is also huge for weddings. And June is kind of quiet. I mean, there's some business for me, but these are things that if I had gone in and out in a 12-month period, I wouldn't have been able to compare year over year. And when you commit to a little bit of a longer time frame, you will find patterns in your market. If you're making Christmas ornaments, well, you probably know when you're going to be busy, you know. And if you're making Christmas ornaments, do you have a plan for what you can possibly make in April, May, and June? Because it's probably a little slow then. And you can look at this bigger picture and really look at what's happening in your market over time. That's your very first easiest metric. I don't think that's fair. But it is your first automatic metric that comes to you is seasonal patterns. And this is something that is definitely going to be unique to you, where other people are going to be complaining about their business and it might not be relevant. And that is your takeaway number three. It is really important to have a community to talk to and to ask questions with of other Etsy shop owners. But it's also really important to know when it's time to stay in your own lane, so to speak, and to know that everybody is running a different business with a different customer base, different price points, different product offerings. And so just because a handful of people are up in arms because their business is doing terribly, yours may be on the opposite end of the spectrum. Vice versa. You might have those days, and this is again back to comparisonitis, which is terrible. You don't want to feel like, oh my God, you know, these people are absolutely crushing it this month and I've got nothing. What's wrong with me? I give up. You know, you need to really pull way, way back, look at the bigger picture of things before you make a decision that's going to cause that kind of a tantrum. I think this is a great segue into my tantrum. So picture I have fast forward in my story from my first $50 sale to now I've got probably, I don't know at what point in my history this was, probably around 30, 40,000 in sales. Doing fine. I wake up in the morning, I grab a cup of coffee, I go sit down one nice, you know, cold February morning, and I'm ready to edit a few of my shop listings. And I sit down and I log on to my computer and I do my login, and it says, sorry, this shop, I don't know, no longer exists, or this shop is not an active shop, or something like that. And I think, well, that's not right. Of course I am, you know, so do that again, log in again. No, sure enough, what has happened here is I wake up one morning, literally overnight, and I have no Etsy shop. Imagine the years and the hours that I have put in, the momentum that I have, and I wake up and my shop does not exist. So, yeah. Where do I go? Of course, just what I told you, all these, the Facebook groups, your friends and those groups, this is when you need them. What can I do? Who can I contact? I can't even think straight, can barely see straight at this point. My shop is missing. It's like it's been kidnapped. It's gone. It's just not there. So a few very helpful people asked me a few poignant questions. You know, did you this? Did you that? Now, one of the biggest topics right now is copyright infringement, and you can be shut down for copyright infringement. If you're trying to make money off of properties that are owned, intellectual property, like NFL teams or Disney or, you know, goes on and on, Marvel, anything that Taylor Swift might have ever touched, you can't make money off of these things. Well, okay, let's back up. Some people are doing it. This is another topic for another entire podcast. The point is they can and most likely will eventually be shut down. So copyright infringement was never an issue for me because I everything that I post is very much original, and I knew that copyright infringement wasn't coming into play here. That couldn't be the reason that I could have been shut down. So I had ruled that out. And so one of the other reasons that you can be shut down, which makes perfect sense, is for fee avoidance. Now, if you're going to own an Etsy shop, you're going to make money on sales, but you're also going to pay an amount in fees to Etsy. Every time you list an item, you have to pay them. And they're also going to take commissions on what you sell. For the reason of the fees, you give them your credit card number and they keep that on file. And each month you are charged for whatever the fees may be, however many listings you have racked up fees with. So they had my credit card, no problem. But, you know, we've been doing that for a couple years, business as usual. Well, what had actually happened is, you know how on your credit card you have an expiration date? Yeah, mine had an expiration date and it had reached that date. I suppose I had been issued a new credit card and forgot to update my new information on my credit on the Etsy site. So Etsy didn't have my most up-to-date card information when they tried to send me my monthly bill. The transaction wouldn't process. So they sent me an email saying just that. We're unable to process your transaction. Well, here's the problem. I didn't get that email. I had some crazy like junk mail filter setting that was really sensitive switched on in my email. And they sent me a warning email. They sent me another warning email. I forget if it was two or three, but they did do their part. They sent me these emails. I just never saw them. And so after whatever second or third warning, they just simply shut me down. Since I wasn't going to pay Etsy, they weren't going to host my shop. You know, fair is fair. That's business. Well, I mean, it was so upsetting. I was able to get a phone number and get on the telephone with a human being at Etsy. Took a little bit of doing. It's, you know, it's not their first mode of communication, I will tell you that. But once I did, I was just able to give them my credit card number and they were able to update my info. And it took about 3 days, but then it was like a switch was flipped and my site was completely back. My shop was online again. Every review that I had, every product that I had, all the conversations I ever had, convos with any of my customers, everything was back again. It really was like flipping a switch. The store was not there. Oh, the store is here again, you know, with all of its history, all of its products. And I should have probably just said, okay, well, you know, that was unfortunate. Shame on me. My email filter, what do you call it? Junk mail filter was a little too sensitive. Let's fix that problem and get on with life. Well, I did do that. I did fix my junk mail filter. I did get on with life. I also did get on with building my own e-commerce website on my own .com, my own domain with my own shopping cart. And now here's the thing where you get to be judge and jury. I was so, so upset that I could potentially lose an entire business to the flip of a switch at someone else's control, that I deactivated many of my listings, deleted some of my listings. Then it goes a little further. When I get crazy, I actually just put my shop on vacation. Once I had my .com running, which was probably 5 or 6 weeks down the line from this event, I put my shop, my Etsy shop, on vacation, you know, which you can do for a few days if you need to catch up. I put my vacation on for, oh, I don't know, maybe like 8 months. I was so furious. I was so disenchanted, and I was so really, I think panicky would be the word, to come to the realization that somebody had that much control over my business. And so I decided to make the jump and make it fast and have my own website. With that, I just want to say, I still have my own website. I also still have an Etsy site. And I would like to let you know the kind of summary of the pros and cons of my actions and the consequences of my actions in that moment. Before I do that, take a second to just think, like, what would you have done? Would you have reacted like that? Would you have been so just over the clouds, just not over the clouds? It's supposed to be like a good emotion. Whatever the metaphor would be, would you have been so furious or so upset to have that, you know, have that incident happen that you would have reacted as quickly as possible? Or would you have maybe said, I think I'm going to start exploring this other avenue, but let's think about this. And you know, it's rhetorical. There's no right or wrong answer here. But you'll find out where some of my decisions did hurt me a little bit and did help me. And I'm just going to tell you both sides of that coin. So there are basically three different things that I want to address that are pros and cons of selling on Etsy and selling on your own website. Now, it's in Etsy's terms of service, to begin with, that if somebody purchases from you, they're actually technically a customer of Etsy, not your customer. Now, think about that for a minute, okay? So then this was just something that, you know, I was already upset because my shop had been shut down through powers that I felt were beyond my control. Whether or not that was true, and it was really my spam filter that was to blame in this event. But at the end of the day, they had the ultimate control over my shop. But another thing that always bothered me in the back of my mind is you are not supposed to add these people to a mailing list. They would have to do a double opt-in somewhere else in order for you to start sending periodic emails, you know, or sales coupons, things like that. And I never really liked how how that was treated. I can understand it from an Etsy kind of corporate view, but at the same time, as a seller, it just feels like you're always swimming against the tide. So it's bad enough. People will think about it. If someone asks you or you ask somebody, oh, those are beautiful earrings, where did you get them? More often than not, isn't that person, if they've bought them through Etsy, aren't they going to say, oh, I bought them on Etsy? They're not going to usually call out the actual shop name that they bought them from on Etsy. I have a particular jewelry designer that I buy from, and every time I get asked about where I purchased it, I try so hard to make sure I say her name in her design shop, because Etsy doesn't make anything. It's a platform. But we do this. This is what consumer culture is right now. Oh, where did you get that sweater? Oh, I got it on Amazon. Well, that's not really that helpful, is it? I mean, you got it on Amazon, you got it on Etsy. Okay, great. You bought it online. We know not to go searching for it at a brick and mortar retail store. When you're selling on Etsy, you are not supposed to be contacting people. You are not supposed to send them a message and ask them for positive feedback, even though the rankings of your reviews is weighing heavily now. This is a more recent development with Etsy, but they're starting to close shops down just for not having a good review history. So you're not supposed to go in pursuit of the customers. You are not supposed to go in pursuit of the good reviews. And this is all in Etsy's terms of service. Now, these things never sat well with me. So that was part of what factored in to me wanting to sell on my own website. You're also not supposed to sell the same stuff on your own website. So I don't. I figured out, well, okay, I will have products here that you can buy. You can buy them as is, or you can personalize them yourself. And then if you want something custom, you can come and deal with me on my website. And that was sort of the way that I split my customer base and was able to build up a new following that I can engage in email campaigns and not be breaking any terms of service. Anything that I have available on my own website is not the same item that is available on my Etsy shop. And really, if you think about it, it's you don't really even want to do that to yourself anyway. You don't want to be putting yourself against yourself in two different spots. Now, something else I had not considered, and I will tell you this, I hadn't thought this through. I think I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, my traffic was 88% or more coming from Pinterest, pins that I put on Pinterest. Now, once you pin something on Pinterest, if it takes off, it's just there. I have yet to figure out how to make a pin not be there. So I have some artwork floating around that I did 5 years ago. And you know, as a creative, as an artist, if you look at something you did 5 years ago, sometimes you're like, ooh, you know, it's come a long way. I don't really do that anymore. And so I cringe a little, and these pins are still getting pinned. But that's the point. They are still getting pinned. And these pins have a URL that they point to, and that is the product on my Etsy shop. But what did I do? Remember back when I said I had a tantrum and I deactivated a lot of listings? That's okay. I can reactivate listings, but some listings I completely deleted. Once you delete an Etsy listing, you can't ever recreate that same listing. It's assigned a unique number. And once you delete that listing, now I have a bunch of pins out there that actually took off, and they did pretty well back in the day when you could have organic pins take off easily. And that's a different topic too. But now if you click on that, it will bring you to a page that says, oops, sorry, this product is no longer available. Well, it gets worse. Hang on now. Not only does it say, oops, sorry, this product is no longer available, it says, here are some other products you may like. Do you think they might showcase something from my other 200 listings that I have on Etsy currently? No. It says, here are some products you might like, and they basically parade all of my main competition, anyone else with the same keywords that I'm using, right there with big, bold photographs of their stuff. Now, up in the top left, you can still say, oh, look, I see the shop link. I could still go to the shop. But from a user interface standpoint, it is so minimalized. All you see really is this parade of photographs of my competition. So that had me also pretty emotional for a while. Until this is where we start talking about really looking at metrics. I started to look at my metrics, and I will tell you that right now my Pinterest metrics are dropping from what they have been over the last couple of years. Part of that, I think, has to do with what's trending in weddings. Part of it has to do with, I think, we're getting into more of a pay-to-play situation, and if you're not paying to promote your pins, they're not going as viral as organically as they used to. So that's two theories that I have. But what's also happening is my Etsy sending me actually more business is beginning to be a thing, because not only are people seeing my competition on my page, it's happening on everyone else's pages too. So any of my competitors, when people land on an oops link, there's a better chance of my work coming up in theirs. Etsy is there to cross promote anybody on the Etsy platform. Okay. Anybody who has opened a shop on Etsy is paying Etsy fees. Anybody who makes a sale on Etsy, Etsy gets a commission. I'll tap into this just for 2 seconds here, but copyright infringers, they're not supposed to be doing that, okay? Etsy says, no, do not do that. That's naughty. You should not copyright infringe. Etsy says, we are serious about copyright infringement. They're serious about copyright infringement. As soon as the owner of that intellectual property sends them a message and says, hey, I own that. Here's the proof. Make that stop. And then what Etsy does is they say, oh, we're so sorry, Disney. We're really, really sorry. We'll shut that person down. We'll shut their whole shop down. They don't just remove that product. They shut down that shop. And I really want you to pay attention to this, just in case in the back of your mind you're thinking, oh, but I could sell these really cute Frozen birthday decorations. They will not only shut down your entire shop for the copyright infringement, any other shops, some people run multiple Etsy shops because they're different product types, they will shut you as a user, account holder, down. So if you have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Etsy shops, they all go down. You do not get reinstated on Etsy ever. Game is over. Okay. So yeah, they are serious. But, you know, you can go on Etsy right now. You can do a search on Disney products, and you're going to find a ton. You're going to find a ton of things that infringe on Disney's property. It's just because they haven't gotten in touch with them yet, and it doesn't mean they won't. They literally have people who go after small little Etsy shops. It happens. But until they do, if that shop makes a $5 sale, Etsy gets a commission on it. If they make a $50 sale, Etsy gets a commission on it. And that's business. You know, until they are reported by an owner of that IP, or, you know, a lawyer from Disney or a lawyer from the NFL team, whatever it is, they do sort of turn a blind eye. And, you know, call it what you may, I kind of call it corporate greed, but they're running a business that is really, really trying very hard to stay afloat in the face of Amazon. Again, probably another podcast topic altogether, Etsy versus Amazon. But we've come into a consumer mentality that is trying to compete with what Amazon has kind of set as what our normal is, the new normal of online shopping. So anyway, long story short here, when you are looking at reasons to have your own .com versus reasons to have an Etsy shop, it is good to have ownership over your own email list to be able to contact your own customers with your coupon promotions or your sales, new products that you want to just promote, just to stay in front of people. And you are not supposed to do that through Etsy. Okay, so I basically had some reactions, and when I look back now, because I am further removed, and I guess, you know, like they say, hindsight is 20/20, I can tell you now, in hopes that you can save yourself some heartaches, I reacted very quickly because I was really upset. I was really freaked out about how much control I had handed over. I had really, you know, given the reins over to this outside company, this outside platform, over my entire business at the time. What did I do? I started my own .com shopping cart. I brought over customers from Etsy. I still continued to use Etsy sort of as a funnel. If somebody liked what I did, but they wanted it this way and that way, I said, oh, I only do customs over here on my site. And I built out my own following from that. Those, I think, are positive moves. But remember I mentioned I shut my shop down. Like, I didn't take it offline completely, but I deleted listings, I deactivated listings, and I put the whole shop on vacation, for crying out loud, for a really, really, really long time. I mean, not just for like 7 days. It was like 8 or 9 months. That was too much. It negatively impacted my traffic, negatively impacted whatever kind of views and visits will have an effect on your Etsy algorithm. And it really took me a long time to get that momentum started up again once I decided that Etsy also had some reasons why I did want to maintain a presence there. There are actually some really beneficial things that I still find by selling on Etsy today. And it's not just the traffic. It's not just the Pinterest links. I will tell you right now, I'm probably over 90% of the products that I sell now on Etsy are digital. That was something I was never going to do. That was something I thought my products needed to be printed by me. I had to have complete control over them. I didn't want my customers to ever print them and not be satisfied with them and give me a bad rating. I lived in fear of the bad ratings. But, you know, I wasn't giving my customers as much credit as I should have. They are very happy with the digital downloads I'm selling. But I will tell you this. My digital downloads are a fraction of the price that I would make on a custom printed order. So my model has changed a lot. I think you have to evolve as you learn what's working in your site and what isn't. And one thing that Etsy does for me right now is with digital downloads, you actually need to pay sales tax on digital downloads in certain states, but not all the states. And it's really confusing. First of all, I'm from New Hampshire. Don't hate me, but we don't even have sales tax. We're one of those weird states that you don't pay sales tax on anything. So as a New Hampshire business, I thought, I'm in the free and the clear. But it's not like that. Digital items are becoming a thing nationwide and, you know, worldwide too. You also have to pay different taxes on things that you sell outside of the United States. And I will tell you that if you're going to do that, if you're going the digital route, Etsy keeps track of that better than I can. And so I don't know how into accounting you are and into keeping up on every tax law of every state and every country you may be, but Etsy is a lot better at that than I am. So for that reason, I love selling digital items through Etsy because they know what Utah's sales tax is versus what California versus, you know, Idaho, And I don't really care. And you probably don't either. So that's something that they not only make sure that that tax is charged to the customer, it is also paid to the respective state that it's owed to. Yay, because who likes accounting? Show of hands? Yeah, I didn't think so. Me neither. That's one of the reasons I love selling on Etsy digitally. But like I said, if you want to build an email list, you want to build an actual business where you can communicate with your customers, you do sort of need a .com or your own shopping cart and your own double opt-in so that you can email them and contact them and not be in breach of anyone's terms of service. Again, we've talked about metrics and patterns, and I had overlooked that the fact that I was getting so much traffic from Pinterest that was landing people on products that I ended up deleting. So here's another takeaway for you. Never, ever delete an Etsy product. Never, ever delete a product that you put on Etsy. Deactivate it if you don't want to sell it anymore. But if you ever started to promote that, if you ever linked a pin on Pinterest to it, just deactivate it. And then someday down the line, when you want to add a listing, just sort of reconstruct that listing. Change the photo, change the title, change the price, change the description, all of that. But at least if somebody's interested enough to click in from another place, they'll still end up in your shop and not just at a oops page that says, hey, but here's all the competition. So please, if you don't, there are a few takeaways, I hope, from this podcast, but this is one I really want you to really hold on to. Never delete a listing. Deactivating is your friend. And you can keep, I think right now I probably have 180 deactivated listings that I can, like I said, hey, I had a tantrum. I wasn't kidding. I had a huge Etsy shop. And when I get mad, man. So that was, I am still digging out, literally. And it has taken me time. I do want you to know in summary here as the sort of a happy ending. The first year that I had my own domain, my own shopping cart, I did over $11,000 in sales on that, and I was very happy with that. I was very proud, but think about it. I was doing $25,000 a year on Etsy, so, you know, it's encouraging, and all those things I said, I was able to really, truly call these people my customers and really, truly pursue them and court them as customers, but it's still only, you know, less than 50% of the revenue that I had been making on Etsy. And now as I'm trying to get the traffic going again in my Etsy shop, it's taking a lot to get that momentum going. I shot myself in the foot, and I want everyone to know about this because, hey, you know, this is my story. This is my history. I'm digging out from it. And I don't think that I lose anything by sharing this. You know, being proprietary about this kind of information, I don't see the point. There's nothing that I can lose by telling you this. There's only ways for you to gain and for you to gain momentum more quickly than I did without having to go down these side roads and alleys and pitfalls. So never delete a listing. And what else? What were some of the takeaways from the beginning? Metrics and patterns. Be in it for the long run. Because you want to watch your statistics, you want to watch your conversion rates, which we'll talk about in another episode, and you want to watch the patterns of your seasons, your months, week to week and month to month, how things go in your own shop, not just with the chatter of what other people are doing. It's really not all relevant. So I hope that this episode has helped you in a few ways. And for more details and some more in-depth topics, please continue to listen to Hat Chats. We will be diving more into the evidence that saves you and exactly how to really look at some of the metrics that you're able to follow and how to apply that. Because come on, we don't really like numbers. We don't like accounting. We don't like spreadsheets, right? But there are ways to make those things your friends and to make it really simple. So we'll talk about that in some other episodes. For now, this is Michelle Baker, your host of Hat Chats. Thank you so much for joining me again, and good luck with your shop and with your creations.